All right, you guys, welcome to this week's episode of Temple of Hoop Podcast. Opening playoff weekend here with the bro Kings. Kings, what's going on?
Yeah, a lot of work, a lot of games, so let's get into it, man.
Man, yeah, let's rock. Let's start with your boys right away. I know you called your shot early. Timberwolves in seven. You put it out there in the atmosphere. They definitely came out, handled business game one on the road, 130-117. And Edwards, 36-6. Cat, 29-13. Beasley, 23 off the bench. D'Lo, big plays late, even though had an off night. Mm-hmm. Man, I just let you go. What was your takeaway from the game, man?
I'm gonna be honest with you. I watched the game. I really just think we're better. Like I'm just keep it 100. It don't look like a fluke to me. We're clearly the better half court team. The only way Memphis can beat us is if we're playing up and down the whole game. If we make this a half court possession by possession battle, we execute at a higher level. I think that. What Memphis is going to have to stop doing, especially with Ja, is they're going to have to stop trying to run into the Timberwolves defenders when they attack. Because it seems like for them, it's just we're going to drive in the paint and we're going to force the refs either call something or we're going to see if, you know, the Timberwolves are just going to at some point fold and keep letting our physicality take over. And the T-Wolves are not folding. This is the part of the new mentality, like I talked about, that Pat Bev and Ant has instilled in this team. You saw Cat giving effort on defense. You know, a lot of people was wondering, is Cat's new bravado, was it fake? And I said, fake it, keep make it. And he keeps faking it, and we keep making it. So, we really believe we're a better team. And, you know, I told people to pay attention to those regular season matchups because we had this confidence with Memphis all year, and we stuck with it. So, for us, man, like, we're just a better half-court team. As long as we're making a possession-by-possession battle, I think we're the better team. Although Memphis is top-to-bottom better than us, I do agree with that. When they took out Steven Adams, you saw me tweet, man, please put back Steven Adams in the game. because Clark was making life hell for us. So, you know, it's going to be tough. You know, it's going to be a seven-game series. I definitely think Memphis will come out, win next game. I wouldn't even be shocked if they won game three, but I'm that confident that When game six comes, I'm that confident that we will be right there, either up 3-2 or down 2-3 with ability to win game six. I'm just confident that we will find a way to win this in seven.
And that's tough. And man, just gotta harp on that Steven Adams comment, man. How many years does it take before these teams realize that he's just a regular season guy? What he does is great. He eats up minutes, he's a tank. He's going to survive the whole 82-game grind. But these are the best basketball coaches and scouts in the world, man. They are going to play this dude off the court. This is going since 2017. He has not been playable in the playoffs. So I think at some point, Taylor Jenkins is going to have to decide, make a decision with that starting lineup. I know coaches like to say, you know, we got to be us, but it's just too much film. In history that shows you he can't play. 0 points, 3 rebounds in 24 minutes. The reason you do play him is because of the offensive glass, the extra possessions he gives you, right? He just wasn't even doing that. And then Cat was killing him out in space, can't defend a pick and roll, hemorrhaging a gang of threes. I think the biggest thing that blows well for Minnesota is the how many more threes they got up than the Timberwolves. I think it was 15 more threes. If I recall correctly, I'll double check that. Let's see, Minnesota got up 41 threes to 27, 14 more threes than they got. With the rate, as well as Minnesota suits them, that's not sustainable. That's not something that Memphis can allow to happen next game. So they got to lower Steven Adams minutes, get more athletic out there, and play their game, man. But I think you are correct. This is going to be a long series. I put Memphis in five, man, but – think about playoffs, it's never about seeding. It's always about matchups.
Matchups, yep.
So, you know, that is the key here. So you got Memphis tied it up next game, but you're still sticking with Minnesota in seven.
Yeah, I got Memphis tied it up. I think there were some good things that they did in game one, especially in terms of getting in transition. I think Ja will definitely have games this series where he does find his shot and his floater from attacking in that in-between area, and he'll start hitting those. I definitely think he'll get a few games of that. I anticipate game two will be one of those games for him. But I just think over the long run, the execution, the half court, we're just going to take over with that. And the thing with Steven Adams, I understand why he plays, because in Taylor Jenkins' mind, it's like he doesn't want to have Jaren Jackson Jr. at the five, because it's like he knows Cat is going to be on the perimeter. So that's going to take JJJ from the five spot if JJJ's in to the perimeter, and going to remove that rim protection threat that he has. So he wants to be able to play JJJ as that help side defender where he can kind of roam off the whoever's guarding Cat. You know what I mean? And then JJJ kind of takes off a guy who's just not a good offensive threat, and he kind of runs off that. Thing with us on the T-Wolves is that that also is a problem, because a lot of our guys can just shoot. I mean, we have the McDaniels. We have the
Man, I'm looking at it right now.
You know what
Ant,
I mean?
Ant, four threes. McDaniels, two threes. Beasley, four threes. Cat hit two. Beverly hit two. Just a bunch of guys. You 39% on 41.
Even Najee Ariya gets them up. You know what I mean? If you give him the chance to, he'll get them up. So it's just like, it's so many of us that shoot threes. It's just hard. You know, it's just hard on Jaren Jackson. A lot of people are thinking between, it's like, why isn't he dominating the boards? It's just, it's hard because he's such an important rim protector. If he's not out guarding the perimeter, he has to contest the shots. So somebody else has to rebound. So I understand the real predicament that Taylor Jenkins is in, because not only does Adams allow JJJ to roam, Adams is also one of their better rebounders on the team. So it's just, it's tough. And that's why I said this was going to be a tough matchup, because, you know, I mean, the reason why Grizzlies match up so well with the Warriors is that Draymond Green's not a threat from the three. You know what I mean?
He's not
a threat from outside. When you're playing against a team like with a guy like Cat, who is a real three-point threat, like that is tough. That is just tough to defend. And that's been the formula for why Milwaukee's been so successful in the East. That stretch five is just such a game breaker for offensive game planning and for defensive scheming. It's just a lot of pressure. And I understand Jenkins' predicament that he's in, but he's going to have to figure something out and just roll with Mark and just trust the athleticism to recover, because Adams is just not going to do it.
Right, man. I got it. And it's just, when you watch Carl Anthony Towns play, it's just like, you know, you wonder what took so long, because he really just does not have a weakness offensively.
Right.
Like he can do everything. Like, he likes to do everything good. So you just like
pass. That's like the only one. That's the only
thing. You know, I think he's okay. He's not Joker, but I think he's just okay at it. But he's just offensively, from a scoring standpoint, inside out, you just kind of been waiting for this, and it's good. And before we move on, man, Ant Edwards, man. I can't believe the discourse around him, because he mentioned having other interests outside of basketball. But he may not have loved the game, but this dude, man, he's out there, he is competitive. He feels like he's the best player on the floor, and he is making me a fan. He is shooting up my favorite player in the league list, and I think we both mentioned it. The game is in great hands going forward, man. Dude is 20.
Yeah, man. I mean, he's a fun guy. He likes to compete. Like, that's just what it is, man. He's not going to run away from any competition. Doesn't care what seed the opponent is. But he's also a coachable guy. It's one of those rare traits where he's very, very confident, has a lot of moxie, but he allows himself to be coached, and he allows himself to trust his teammates. He never, if you know, one thing you notice, he's never like ball hogging. You know what I mean? He's never just one to really try and like take away the ball if another person got it going. Like, there were times in the game I'm like, bro, stop defaulting to D'Lo. Bro, look at the ball. D'Lo playing a horrible game right now. But that's how Ant is. Ant trusts his teammates. He wants to play his role and maximize his role within the scheme, within the offense, within the flow of the game. Never trying to press too much unless he feels his team needs to. Like, you saw those timely buckets where, you know, you felt like, oh man, here comes, you know, Memphis, and then all of a sudden Ant comes in, makes a shifty layup, drives in, slows it down, gets to the paint and one, or gets to the line, hits a timely three, you know, slows it down, gets step back. You know what I mean? Like, he's just, his feel for the game at such a young age is just ridiculous. Like, it's absolutely ridiculous how he understands the flow of the game, when to assert himself, when to not. It's just, man, the guys, man, like, they just feel confident. Like, his confidence radiates onto everybody else. And he's a perfect complement to the veteran Pat Bev, man. Like, right. Both of those guys together is just, they just make everybody believe that they can win. Like, that's just what it is.
Maybe I'm looking forward to that one. Game two of that series is happening on Tuesday, 5:30 Pacific. It will be in Memphis, and we'll see if they can tie it up. Next game, we want to talk about another highly contested one that we were kind of split on, Nets-Celtics. We both have Celtics in six, I think.
I had Celtics in seven.
Seven, yeah, right. So I think it's leaning after game one. I think you may be more comfortable with what you said. Took some late-game heroics. Kyrie was special in the fourth quarter. What was your take on that? That was just a phenomenal game, by the way. Kyrie was special. Like, I had to tweet you, hey, man, yo, man. And he was like, I think we both said it. You see why these teams deal with his shenanigans, man. When that ball when the ball gets out there, you know, it's not many who can do what he can do. Again, it's a special shot-making display. I got to give credit to Boston. That last defensive sequence, when they had to give themselves a chance to get the game winning, that was special. Getting the ball out of a scorching hot Kyrie's hands. Tatum defending KD as good as I've ever seen KD be defended out in space, forcing a tough leading three-pointer. And then Marcus Smart, I don't know how he figured he had enough time to get that pass off, but get it to Tatum. Tatum with the quick spin gets it up. We may be in for an instant classic with this series, man. So fortunate it's in round one, but that's where the chips fell. But just in general, what was your feel on this game?
But exactly how I thought it would be, war. Flat out war. That's exactly what I expected from this series. Both teams, I mean, Kyrie and KD, you already know what they're about. But Tatum and Brown, especially Tatum, they just feel super confident, especially when it comes to playing Brooklyn. I told that to Paul, that man, Tatum just, he feels the confidence. He's up for the challenge when he sees Kevin Durant, he sees the Brooklyn Nets. It's just something about the way he approaches that team. It's just different. I just think from mentally, it's just different the way Jason Tatum approaches the Nets than when I see him play other teams. Like, he is very aggressive. He's very willing to take the challenge on both ends and just challenge KD on both sides of the ball. And then just, you know, to see, you know, one of the things I always talked about with Boston, their issue being what, Marcus Smart jumpers, just never a good offense. That was just a fantastic, you know, under pressure thing for Smart, man. 4 seconds left. He's the type who's prone to taking that type of hero ball shot. To be in the moment, pump fake, get two guys up, not bring it back up, attack the numbers, and get it to the best player on your team for an easier shot. Man, that was just, I mean, that's just excellent play execution in the moment. This is going to be a great series because Kyrie, KD's not going to play like this every series. You know he's going to have his series where his games where he imposes his will. But the Boston Celtics players are not scared at all. You saw Horford, man.
Man, I was just going there. Turn back the clock game, a vintage game. 20 and 15, 2 for 2 on threes, 8 for 13 shooting, 20 points, 15 rebounds, 2 assists. Only one turnover, was a plus 8 on the day. It's really a special game from him. I think part of that is he played 41 minutes too at his age, which is crazy. But
that was the Rob Will during regular season probably kept his legs fresh.
Right.
And I wanted to bring up a point. Honestly, I think for a series like this too, funny enough, and I kind of talked about this. People, I said I think Horford is actually better for the Nets than I think Rob Will is, just because his versatility on both ends of the floor. Rob Will is definitely a switchy guy, bouncy guy, but Horford I think is more It's definitely very, very intelligent with his positioning. He's also been a really, really good switch big for a lot of his career. And then offense, you know what he can do, spacing the floor, hitting the mid-range. He provides a lot of versatility that I don't think Rob Will would have provided on that end. And I think that matters when you play a team like the Nets, when you know they have that type of firepower. So honestly, I think Horford was really the better matchup for the Nets for them from the big perspective. I think Rob Will hurts them when he starts getting the Embiid's. And you start getting to Giannis. Although Horford is good at guarding both those guys, but, you know, he's just his age. You know what I mean? It starts to get you in trouble there. But, yeah, I like the Celtics overall. But at the same time, you know who the Nets have. KD, Kyrie, Seth Curry can go off at any single time. There's the rumors of Ben Simmons probably coming back game three. But even then, like I was telling somebody, that's such a risk because of his offensive play style.
I just want to say, you sure the team you want to bring him back is Boston? I remember some of these Boston series that he's played.
Bro, that, I told somebody, like, if Ben Simmons was like a rim-running big where you could just input in there, you could just take his defense and then just feed him dump downs and stuff on offense, then yeah, of course, that would be perfect. But the thing is, yeah, he's going to give you a great amount of versatility defensively right off the bat, maybe, most likely. But offensively, you know his skill set is very unique, and you have to tell your offense a certain way to make him effective. Like, that's not something you're going to do in a wars-like series, you know what I mean, trying to advance from the first. Like, that's not something you just do, like, at all, like, with no chemistry. Like,
right.
That's not going to happen.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right with that. Not only that, on top of that, you asked him to go right into high leverage basketball with no build up on his side too. So that's something else to consider. Man, I'm with you. Going back to your KD point, 23 points with 24 shots, kind of unheard of from him. He'll definitely get better there. Game two of that series is Wednesday, 4 p.m. Definitely looking forward to that. Let's move on to, I think, the one series we had different when it was in Toronto, Philly. Definitely looked good on your end. It was ugly. Pretty much all your talking points came to fruition. Great call on the Maxi deal. All the attention they gave Harden and Embiid left him free to play one-on-one basketball, and he just absolutely ate. Playoff debut, 38 points, only two assists, but he was just playing off those guys, so it was fine. Game high. Plus 20, no turnovers, just basically in full out, you know, scoring mode. Raptors had nothing for those guys. Actually, all their attention to Embiid, they kept him a 5-for-15, but Harris ends up 9-for-14. Maxey 14-for-21. Those guys obviously ate off all the attention they were giving Embiid. I'm a little concerned going forward because Scotty Barnes, who actually played decently in game one, sprained his ankle, is doubtful for game two. Raptors already have a very thin bench. Don't play too many guys when the games are close. So that gives me cause to pause. He's probably their best perimeter wing scorer at this point. I think, you know, Siakam's more of a, you know, extended, like that post wing in between, but pure wing. Yeah. So, you know, my pick is on the ropes. I'm going to ride it out, but I'm low-key selling right now. It looks good for you. So just explain what you saw in that game.
Yeah, for me, you know, like I told you, man, Maxey, when you're attacking closeouts, when you're gonna do all that to try and make sure Joel Embiid can't eat because you don't have anyone over 6'10 or 6'9, what happens is that this shifty guy, this quick guy who can score, who can shoot, who can get to the rim, he's gonna get favorable looks all night long. And, you know, a lot of people said something. They said that, Nurse is going to scheme it up so Maxey doesn't score. Okay, so Maxey doesn't score. Now who gets the better looks, Embiid or Harden? Take your pick on that. You know what I mean? And it just comes down to the point, like what Paul was tweeting about, what me and him talked about, that they're just overwhelmed. Like that, the talent advantage was just overwhelming. Like they basically have to be able to guard all of those guys straight up. Like you know, I got you when you said they could guard Harden straight up. You know, if they didn't have to help off Embiid, they could have guarded Maxey straight up and Harry straight up and been fine. It would have been fine if they could guard everybody straight up. They can't guard Embiid straight up because they have no real center. Right. That was the problem. That's why I said this is going to be a long series for them. Embiid's a good passing big. He's also a versatile big who can go outside, inside. But you're going to have to adjust, shift your coverages all over the floor. It's not just going to be he's going to camp in. You get to just do a quick double at the same spot because he always gets in the same spot. Nah, Embiid can get it anywhere and go get his. So you're going to have to shift your coverages all over the place. That's going to get guys on the move on offense, going to get better looks. That's why you saw him Remember I told you? I said 25 and 10. You may not see 25, but he'll probably get more than 10.
Hey, but look, I mean, he got the same scoring output of 22 and 14. So his game scoring output is 25 and 10.
Exactly, right? So it's like I told you, man. It's just as long as they have that backup nightmare and it's just no chance for that. Now, if the Raptors had somebody like Marc Gasol, like they had when they won the chip, then I would have been like, all right, I got you. Raptors in six, because it's like, okay, you put all those guys one-on-one, put Mark Gasol on Embiid one-on-one, you say, go try and cook him for most of the game and tie yourself out. It's like, okay, I see what you guys talking about, but nobody over 6'9", that's not happening, bro.
Right, and I think the surprise for me is the Raptors actually were decent offensively. I thought they struggled a lot more to score. That was my concern. But it wasn't that. It was they couldn't get a stop to save their lives. Like, yep. They were just giving up hemorrhaging open looks. You know, those are long closeouts, as you mentioned, closing out the guys who can attack closeouts. Like Harris in space was decent. Maxey was decent. Maxey's really good out in space. So I think my adjustment would be is you got to give Maxey the attention you were giving Harden. Like, I think Harden's clearly lost a step. I think you got to live a play of Harden straight up and not devote so much attention to him where he gets 14 assists. You got to make him score. You got to make him score. He'll dot you up. You make him pass, rotate like that, heavy hard. You got to trust one of your wings and say, hey, bro, guard Harden. We're not sending that much help. Make it tough. Don't foul him. If he scores on you, we'll live with that. Because right now they're chasing and scrambling at not one guy, but two. They're throwing the house at two guys, and that's just too much to ask of a defense, in my opinion. So they got to make that adjustment in game two, which will be tomorrow, first game, 4:30 p.m. Pacific, or Monday. You guys are hearing this Monday. Today, 4:30 Pacific. So looking forward to that. I mean, aside from that, you know, those are the games that we were different in. There were no really big surprises over the weekend. The biggest surprise for me was the Bucks-Bulls game. The Bucks came out like a defending championship in the playoffs, sent the message. Bulls did not rattle. The funny part was you see all of Lakers' Twitter kind of shedding a tear because Caruso had a special fourth quarter when the Bulls made the run, or third quarter when the Bulls made the run to tie the game, taking charges, creating havoc on defense, making timely baskets, just showing that he is a legitimate, you know, playoff championship core piece and making that series tough. I just have to ask you, kind of getting that same thing we did last playoffs out the gate with Drew and Chris Middleton. Are you nervous about those two going forward? They were able to overcome it last year. Does those two sporadic play in the playoff give you any cause for concern for the Bucks?
Yeah. it's at this point, it's to be expected.
Right.
So it comes down to, will it finally hurt them? I guess that's just going to depend on who they play.
That's what I think. I think if you're the Bucks, you're fortunate Lonzo wasn't playing. You know, he's a high volume 42% 3-point shooter, and the Bulls just couldn't make a three tonight, and they got a lot of open looks. So I think on a night like tonight, you're kind of fortunate. You sneak out of there, they got to correct some things. Middleton, 4-for-13, Holiday, 6-for-16, combined 10-for-29. And I think the big thing is, you know, Middleton, 7 turnovers. You know, he's got more turnovers than made shots. He just can't play that way. He's got 4 made shots, 7 turnovers. He's just got to get better. I will say this, good call on Brook Lopez. He completely makes their defense lockdown.
Yep.
The block shots may not be there, but you talk about somebody who deters rim attempts with verticality and putting their body in the right spot. He's excellent at that. He had DeRozan and LaVine just befuddled on their drives. He's not even a big athlete, but he knows how to position himself far enough from the basket where he's not getting dunked on, close enough to deter the shot. And he just forces tough looks all over the place for these guys. And putting Giannis back in his roaming role where he can destroy weak defenses on the weak side. And that's why they held that team to 86 points. On the Bulls side, man, we got to talk about DeRozan, man.
What?
Once again, I remember we both asked. We was like, is it just going against LeBron or is it a thing? And, man, tonight it was bad, man. 6-for-25, just a lot of – to me, he just started pressing and taking bad shots after a while. He wasn't even trying to get easy ones, and he just killed them tonight. He has a normal game, you know, they kind of walk out of here and steal one, man. You know, DeRozan 6-for-25, Vucevic 9-27, Levine 6-19, and you only lose by seven, man. But man, so man, what are your thoughts on DeRozan, man? That's kind of a thing now. Like that's the what you talk about. He's got to beat the allegations, man. He's not beating them.
I don't think he can. This is definitely not the team where he's going to do it because, you know, we expect inconsistent play from Drew. We expect inconsistent play from Milton. But guess what, everybody, their defense is back. The Milwaukee defense is back. So even if you get inconsistent play, their clamps are back. You know, their clamps are back. So it's going to be hell. It's going to be physical game going up against Milwaukee. But even if you think, you know, that Chris is going to start selling or Drew's going to start bringing time, you got to make your shots on them. And that's not going to be an easy task for any offense. And you still got to defend them physically. And they're going to wear you out. And that and ultimately wear you out. Even though, you know, Middleton and Drew is selling, ultimately it makes you start selling. Because now you have to defend in a way you're not accustomed to, which affects your offensive game, your offensive defense. That's what you saw with DeRozan. That's what you saw with Levine. What you saw with Vucevic. Like, you have to play a certain style defensively to match that team. And it takes away from your offensive game. And they're physical on defense, so it makes you have to work even more offensively and defensively. So that's what makes Milwaukee – very tough. Ever since they got swept by Miami, they just became a physical team. And I think part of that was also getting Drew Holiday, who's a physical point of attack defender. So it's just they're just very physical now. And they wear you down, man. So even when they're having bad shooting nights, they're in the game because they're just defending. Right. So
And I think that's ultimately why, you know, they're the betting favorite thus far.
Yeah,
like this, they know how to win ugly, and that's how playoff games get. So
you can only imagine what happens when their three-point shooters actually make their shots. You know what I mean?
Right. Whew. Yeah, tonight, 10 for 39 from three. You know, they get a normal game, it's a blowout win because of how they defended. Ooh, man. Let's go back out west. Nuggets, Warriors, we weren't surprised too much. My only takeaway from that game is I hope Joe Lacob is willing to open that checkbook because Jordan Poole is not coming back for less than 20 M's per. So that's my takeaway.
Wiggins isn't expiring, right?
Huh?
Wiggins isn't expiring, right?
He's got one more year, I believe.
Yeah, so he's an expiring contract. Yeah, they'll get off his contract and they'll be able to pay for it.
Right. So, yeah, we'll see. I got to ask these next series, do you see any hope for the Nuggets to make this competitive? Michael Porter Jr. mentioned kind of ramping up, possibly for a later return. They just cannot hit a shot consistently outside of Jokic, which was the problem. Do you see Porter coming back, kind of altering this series in any way? I don't.
Well, he's going to be rusty. He wasn't even playing good when he was there. And now he's going to come back rusty off injury. It's not. And Jokic has now fallen out of favor with many vocal folks on social media as well. So, unfortunately, it's going to be a lot of slander showing Joker's way this summer off being a back-to-back MVP, back-to-back sweeps, being swept in the first round this year, most likely. Man, it's tough, man. It's tough, but
– wait, time out. Didn't they beat Dame last year?
They beat Dame, but they got swept by Phoenix.
Oh, you mean swept back-to-back. I thought you meant losing back-to-back.
No, I said swept back-to-back. Okay. I said swept back-to-back.
Right.
It's just tough, man, especially when people know they can just put you in the pick and roll and just exploit that. And team, I know people always say, well, you can put every big in the pick and roll and do that, but not every big doesn't guard it the way he does. You know, there are bigs that guard that a lot better. And he guards that action a lot better. It makes it a lot harder on guards. You saw it with Brooke Lopez, right, on his drop. See how tough it is to score on Brook Lopez on his drop? So it's not the same with every big. You can put every big in an action. Not every big plays defense the same.
Right.
And that's been the knock on Jokic, that his defense is really just not that good when it comes down to the half court execute play by play. You can really exploit it. And people always will cite stats, the metrics during the course of a regular season where, like I said, the regular season is up and down. You know what I mean? If you're playing defense a certain way.
The offenses aren't as pointed as they are in the playoffs.
They're not as pointed. If you're playing defense a certain way in terms of positioning, active hand, and playing in a team concept, you'll be fine. Because you know what? Most teams on a night-to-night aren't trying to exploit the weakness consistently, you know what I mean, to come out with a W because not trying to show all their stuff in a one regular season game. But when you go to the playoffs, when it's do or die, and every game is a must-win game for teams, teams are going to hone in on doing this a certain specific action consistently until it gets stopped. Like, right. That's how teams operate in the playoffs. That's why. And then it's officiated a different way.
Yes.
Slow down, half court. Guys are able to set up their offense and set up their attacks better because it's not, you're not flowing up and down and all that stuff. So, you know what I mean? It's just, it's a lot different play style. And when it's like that, teams are always going to go against what they deem is the weakest point. So you're always going to have to prove yourself. You know what I mean? And that's what it is with Jokic. Until teams feel like he can really stop guys from getting to the bucket, they're always going to challenge him.
Right.
And, you know, and the thing with him is, he cannot always get scoring. He can have some decent plays here and there, but that's also going to tire him out for offense, which is where, you know, you have the guys where, like, the ball don't stop coming in and say, well, they need a perimeter guy. And not even – that point is correct. Not even necessarily the fact that they can't play championship offense without Jokic leading the offensive charge. It's more for the fact that he needs to conserve his energy. You know what I mean? He needs to conserve his energy because you know he's going to get put in on defensive actions. You know he's a special passer, player of passing. You want to be able to get him the ball in crunch time or in tough situations for him to be able to dissect the defense. So you don't want him to have the ball all the time and have to guard all the time on defense. Like, you want to conserve his energy. So you do need that perimeter guy for Jokic to take the pressure off him. Like, you absolutely do. So,
well, that, you know, I think that's why they miss Murray so much. He did a lot of initiating, yep. Right?
That's why I said Murray was the main guy missed. You know, I mean, everybody brings up the two max contract, but you know, Michael Porter Jr. At this point is another catch and shoot scorer, basically. And you know, he's not even, you know, he still has some inconsistencies there. And people say because he's hurt, and I get that, but you know, he always has injury history. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know what I mean? So it's like the Murray's the more reliable one who's gonna be that consistent outside threat for him. It's gonna open the game up for everybody on the team. So it's just tough on Jokic. I don't really blame him too much. But again, people say if you're that guy, you got to make it happen. You know what I mean? Back-to-back MVPs.
You got to make it happen. I mean, that's lacking some context, but at the end of the day, I hear you. It's a balance.
That's just how people look at it. Like,
I'm not blaming him.
I understand it.
No, I'm saying some of that is accurate. I'm just saying there's a balance, though. It's not like all the way well. He just didn't get it done. We got to take in the variables and understand, you know, the variables around a situation. That's all I'm saying. But that's not completely incorrect. There is a you got to get it done aspect to it. We just got to understand the nuance around it, in my opinion. Staying out west, Jazz, Mavericks. I think I'm. I don't know if you agree with me, but if Luka plays, the Mavericks are going to win this series.
Oh yeah,
I'm looking at that like that's a shameful showing for Utah, in my opinion. Like, I watched that game, like that was ridiculous. How bad they played. If Luka plays, they're done. And they're talking about they're talking about punting game two and having them play game three in Utah. If they fall down 2-0, that is tough. But the way Utah's looking, the way they were fading already during the season, they only won that game because Luka didn't play. They did not play.
Absolutely.
So, where are you with that?
I mean, if Luka was there, I had this in a sweep five at most. I thought to myself, "Well, we're definitely getting Luka in the second round finally this year."
Because
you know, it's just a bad matchup. And then, man, credit to Rudy, bro. He willed that team to a victory. People finally again saw, like, yeah. They're like, because they saw that with that defensive sequence right there.
Yes, the video.
That is what happens, and it happens frequently with that team. All right. And man, I respect Rudy Gobert, because for you to play defense like that, to put that much energy and effort, knowing that your team will hardly get you the ball when you deserve to get the ball or where you need to get the ball, that's a winning player, in my opinion.
Right.
That's a winning player. That's a guy willing to do whatever it takes to win. Because you know, you're not probably going to get the ball as much as you would like, or you know these guys aren't going to live for you, but you're still going to come back. You're still going to do it anyway. You're still going to play hard on both ends anyway, and give yourself a team a good chance to win, because that's just it's one of those things where it's either in you or it's not. You know what I mean? And it's in Rudy. He's a winning player, like that, in terms of effort, in terms of desire. He's a winning player, like, period, point blank.
But for those of you who don't know, the video we're referring to is Rudy and Bogdanovich got caught up in the switch. Rudy ended up having Dorian Finney-Smith in the key. Dorian Finney-Smith had no dribble, was in the key.
He got
Bogdanovich. Bogdanovich left the strong side corner to help Gobert in the post against Finney-Smith, and they gave up a corner three, and Rudy completely lost it.
And mind you, Rudy had sat on that drive from the perimeter to the inside. Right. So he was in the inside, switched outside, sat on the drive, had him stuck, and then Bogdanovich, for no reason, decided to leave with the three-point shooter to go help Rudy Gobert of all people.
Reggie Bullock, a known sniper at that.
Sniper, right. So it's like there's nothing you can do with lapses like that. You know what I mean? Like you just – And you know, Rudy, he's going to come back. He's going to give the same effort, offense and defense, whether they pass it to him or not. And, it's at this point, it's like I would like to see him on a team that would actually value his skill set on both ends of the floor.
It was funny. He's absolutely scary in Dallas, Toronto, or Charlotte. Like, he's scary on all three of those teams. So we'll see what happens with that.
Atlanta too.
Yeah, that too. Let's talk about both these 1-8 matchups. No surprise, really, in either. Pelicans did make a late run. It was a 6-point game in the fourth quarter. Chris Paul erupts down the stretch. 24th quarter points, finishes with 28. Goes absolutely crazy. Gave the Pelicans guard a masterclass. They're up 1-0. I picked the Suns in 5. I think B.I. and C.J. maybe go nuclear once. I thought once they got comfortable in the game, knowing it was a playoff, the Pelicans were decent and competed, but it's just a talent deficit in that series, and I just think it'll be over in 5. But you just like to see those guys get that learning experience, get the big fella back next year, and run it back. But I got to give Chris Paul credit, man. You know, age 36, still putting up, performances like that. That's special, man, regardless of who it's against. It's a playoff game. We drop a 20 in the fourth quarter. You know, that's special stuff. Also, Kings, man, we got to talk about Robert Sarver, man. You see Aiden at it again. Was honestly the best player on the floor until Chris Paul went nuclear. Are they going to pay this dude?
I mean, he better. Somebody will.
that's my thing. I was like, you only risk ruining the chemistry by waiting if you're going to do it. I don't know what it is. Are they doing the Capella thing where they wait for a team to sign him and they match it? Or
I think that's the thing. I think they're willing to see how much a team is willing to go for him. I think that was the logic coming into the year. They're willing to see how much a team was really willing to go for Aiden. But yeah, he's gonna get maxed out by somebody because a lot of teams need that type of big man, especially at his age, to develop with their dynamic guards. Yeah. So
I think the sneaky scary part about him, you know, he shot 37% from three this year.
The thing coming in was that he had a nice jumper.
The form always looked good. Correct. Good. Yeah, man. So I'm interested to see how that works out. To Aiden's credit, as a young guy with that clearly on your mind, he's just gone out and done his job day to day. And we might have to start playoff Aiden, man. People complain about him not seeming locked in during the regular season, you know, taking games off, lapses. Tonight, man, that was special tonight. He was dominant. He had historically actually struggled with Jonas Valanciunas of the Pelicans. A couple of matchups he had struggled. He absolutely wiped the floor with him tonight. So I thought that was a good omen. That series is going to be short. Yeah, he stopped 37% from three this year. That series is going to be short, 4 or 5 gamer. And they're going to be on the second round quite easily, in my opinion. On the other end, Miami and Atlanta, for some strange reason, people had it in their mind to pick Atlanta. Some people, a very small minority, had it in their mind to pick Atlanta because Trey is the best player in this series in a lot of people's eyes. Unfortunately, I don't think the game, it doesn't work like that. It's 5 guys on the court. They're just completely overmatched from the part of the game that I saw. I saw 3 quarters of that. It's just, they just threw the house at Trey, rotated greatly out of that. Didn't let him get any space off these pick and rolls. Trey finished 1 for 12. It's the worst playoff game he's had, in his young career yet. Finished 1 for 12, over 7 from 3. 8 points, 4 assists, 6 rebounds. And just Atlanta's notoriously one of the worst defensive teams and plays terrible on the road. So, yeah, no surprises there. Do you see Atlanta even still in a game for Miami?
They could take one because, I mean, Miami, again, has those offensive slumps where they're just – they don't score anything. So I could see Atlanta getting hot, taking one, maybe two even. Just because the Heat just have offensive – terrible offensive games. But, man, the Heat too physical. They play defense. The Atlanta really doesn't.
That's why I don't think it's going past. That's why I think the brooms are coming out. Because even though Miami struggles on offense, as bad as Atlanta is defensively, they're going to get looks. Like they dropped 115 tonight. They're going to keep getting open looks. So, yeah, both 1-8 series possibly or probably going according to plan. Before we get out of here, let's get predictions on tomorrow's games. First one, Raptors 76ers. Scotty Barnes, doubtful. Do you think the Raptors tied up? We got Philly going up 2-0.
Sixers by double digits.
Again, so you don't believe Nurse making adjustments?
No, it's not going to matter. He doesn't have the guys.
Right, now they have the horses. Yeah. You know what? It's Custer's last stand, man. I got to go with the Raptors to make it 1-1 just for agenda's purposes. Game 2, 5:30, NBA TV, Jazz, Mavericks. Luka's out. They've already said that they're going to try. He's going to try to give it a go in Game 3 in Utah. Who do you have tomorrow's game? Dallas almost pulled it out on Saturday.
He could easily win.
That's what I said.
I just got to go with Utah. The advantages should be too much that they just need to win this game. And that's just what it is.
I'm gonna say Dallas ties it up.
I wouldn't be shocked.
I'm gonna say Dallas ties it up. I didn't like it took Donovan going for 30 in the second half alone to get them right. And to be fair, I'll say for all the flack Donovan Mitchell catches all the time, he absolutely raises his game in the playoffs every year.
Yeah, he does. He does.
And for that, I think some of the criticism about his playmaking and his tunnel vision. And shot selection is very valid, but I will say at the least, when the chips are on the table, you can comfortably expect to get the best version of him. I think that is very valuable in itself. So I'll say that. But I'm going to pick the Mavericks to win that game tomorrow and go 1-1. It's just something about Utah, chemistry wise, is not right with that team. Like that game was so ugly on Saturday. Like Dallas was like upset they didn't win that game without Luka. So I'm going to go with them. Nightcap, Denver Nuggets. At Golden State Warriors, I think the Warriors win again comfortably. I think Denver's chance of still a game here is in Denver with the home court, but role players typically play better. Just thinking at Chase Center. I think that's probably the loudest I heard Chase Center rocking to. So credit to the Warrior fans who I keep roasting about the Ginger Five fan base. Y'all showed up in a playoff game. I got to give it to you guys. But I got the Warriors pretty comfortably tomorrow. What about you?
Yeah, same thing. Warriors comfortably. Like I got the Sixers. That matchup, Denver doesn't have the guys. Nothing you can do about that. Warriors winning.
All right, you guys, make sure you follow at It's Kings, bro, on Twitter. Myself, DJMabel55_MST. Subscribe, follow the pod again. You guys, as the playoffs and the end of the season came, you guys definitely got the numbers booming. We appreciate you guys. Anybody who ever takes the time to listen. Throughout your day, definitely appreciate it. We definitely see the feedback. We want to respond to it. We will be back live Wednesday night on Green Room for live reaction to the playoff series in motion and be taking, crowd questions. Those Raptor fans, if you down 3-0 on Wednesday, man, don't run from King. He tried to tell y'all. I know I was coming for his hand, but I'm just saying, don't come for him. Make sure you guys there. Anyway, that's it. That's all. We're out of here. You guys be safe.
Peace, y'all.